Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Daria and Jane. I'm sorry, they're in love, guys. Like, Daria's dry ass, like, super sarcastic shit. And Jane, all they wanted to do is eat pizza and talk shit, you know, kind of like me and my girlfriend. So, facts. I know they're in love.
Your best friend could never, like, their bond was, like, so deep, you know what I mean? Like,
oh my god, yes. Like, to be around someone else that hates all this shit that you hate and also loves the things you love. True love.
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? What season is it?
Spoopy season.
Hey. Oh my god. So what the fuck, y'all? It's good. It's like going to be Halloween. I'm so fucking excited. I'm so fucking hype. I'm usually never this excited, but I know this is Maita's like favorite fucking holiday.
I love this shit so much, and I am celebrating by watching spoopy shit by myself with a beer, but it's fine. I'm okay with that.
Y'all, I know that she likes this holiday so much that, like, before she even left Texas, she was like, we're having a half Halloween party, dress up. And I was like, fuck yes.
It was get it straight. It was a half Halloween cross-dressing costume party.
Oh, fuck yes. It was a gender bender. You were dressed as Han Solo, right?
Yes. My roommate, who was a guy, was dressed as Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
And I was dressed as, like, what, DJ Detweiler from fucking Recess? That shit was lit. I loved it.
Good shit. Good party.
All lesbians. We all own the Han Solo costume. It's right in our closet. And the DJ Detweiler fucking costume, already in our closet. So is that the only thing you're doing, is just watching movies by yourself and drinking beer?
For the most part, I am hanging out with this person the weekend before Halloween. I don't know if you, like, know who she is or not.
I wonder, who could that person be?
She's this, like, director lady, like, no big deal. You know what? I'll tell you about it later.
Yeah, let's spook them later. But yeah, I guess we're both going to be hanging out with that, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm also going to be hanging out with you.
Yeah, you know, I'm also going to be there.
So
that's,
it'll be
so exciting. We have stuff coming, but it's coming later, guys.
Yeah, it'll be a super quick trip, but I don't know. You'll be in LA just for a little bit, and then you're going to come back later for a lot of bit. So
a lot of bit. Yeah, I'm so hyped, y'all. I'm going to LA for like a day and a half. It's going to be worth it. Like, it's coming. It's hot fire coming for you, but can't talk about it yet.
But anyways, I'm excited for today's episode, but we have some homework to do. We have some things to talk about first.
Oh god, so much shit is going on as per usual. And where do you want to start, Maita? That's all you.
Let's talk about some easy things that are going on in TV, just to put it on you guys' radar. Light as a Feather is a Hulu original that just came out, and it has an Asian lesbian in it, which is kind of cool. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, but I'm hearing good things. So you guys should check that out just to get into the spoopy season. It's a spoopy show. there's a new show out called All American. I saw the pilot yesterday. This show's been on my radar because I saw their writer's room, and the black and brown faces made me really, really happy. So,
oh my god,
it's a pretty good show.
They letting us write.
Yeah, they're letting us, like, do things, and we're doing them real well. So keep All American on your. I mean, it's about, like, football and stuff, and it's based in LA. So I'm into it, but if you guys aren't, I get it. I just think it's gonna be real good, and there's a black lesbian character in it.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's all. Look, if there's queers, we're there. I mean, well, most of the time,
yeah.
Most of the time. We'll talk about other times where we're not going to be present. Maybe not. Maybe, I don't know. We're finding out, right?
But speaking of black lesbians, Black Lightning is also back. So get on that shit. I think it's every Monday. I don't know what day they're premiering on, but the season one premiere was pretty fun. And I'm really excited about that show. I still think it's good, and I think it's getting better. And that's good job CW for once. I don't know.
Oh yeah, but I mean, you know, they're doing something right for once.
Yeah, they're still super heavy on the social justice issues and stuff.
That's good. Oh, dude, did you see that Ruby Rose Batgirl, Batwoman outfit?
You know, and they clearly, I mean, from what I'm seeing, I think they just kind of superimposed like the bottom half of her face onto like a rendering, because that Batwoman costume looks just like it does in the comics and stuff. I don't think it even looks bad. I think it looks kind of cool. I'm still very reluctant about this whole thing, though.
Yeah, it's not that it looks bad. It's just like it doesn't look like Ruby Rose, and I'm just kind of like, I'm still just like, she's not.
I'm
probably not gonna watch it.
I don't know how to even feel about that thing. Did I tell you that I went to see the writers panel live here in West Hollywood not too long ago? And was it West Hollywood? It was somewhere around here. And the showrunner of it was there. I was hoping to hear from her and hear more about her, but like, she was probably the one that spoke the least in the entire panel the entire time, and I didn't get any information from her, unfortunately, about Batwoman. All I know is she's a lesbian. Aww. That's it.
We just know that the showrunner is queer. That's mm-hmm. it.
Yep. So that was kind of unfortunate. Nice. Yeah, and I'll link the podcast episode, because there's a lot of other women that were on that writers panel that are going to be doing interesting shows that are worth checking out. Mm. And I love that podcast, the writers panel podcast. So I'll link it, but she didn't really say much.
Okay, cool. I don't, because like, maybe if she spoke more and like you got some information, maybe I could feel better about it, you know, but like, I'm giving that show a lot of shade until then, because like Ruby Rose was just wrong for it. Unless she's proven me wrong, you know, like it's not for me.
Right on. But let's talk about what's on everybody's mind. And honestly, I don't even know if it will be on everybody's mind at this point or what will happen, because tonight, Charmed.
Tonight.
Charmed premieres on the CW.
No.
I know a lot of people have a lot of hesitation, especially after what was sort of came to light this week. I don't know necessarily, like, it was just a complicated situation, but the gist of it is that this has been kind of marketed, or the media has kind of reported this show as like this show about Latinas, and in particular Afro-Latinas, who are at the center of it, and it's about them and all this stuff. And it was kind of confusing reporting this week that was going on, because everybody's like, wait, they're not Latinas after all, they were lying. And it was just so what basically ended up coming out is that the three sisters are Latinas, all three of them are Latinas. The two of them are Afro-Latinas, and one of them is not. The one that is not is played by Melanie Diaz, who is an actual Latina, and the only one. Yeah, and the other two, they're Black women, and people are pissed, I guess, because they were like some. I guess there was a rumor going around that they were all Latinas, and we definitely need Afro-Latina representation, and we're gonna get the representation, but not the actresses who are Latinas. I have trouble hating on it, because I think it's still it's all POC women, and I think from what I've read about the Black women who are playing the Afro-Latina characters, they seem to be very respectful, they themselves. I don't think that the marketing team or the casting people were very respectful, but I think that those women are, and I don't think they're gonna like fuck up.
I think they're learning Spanish.
One of them learned Spanish.
I think that's
so cool. Like,
okay,
it's underrated how much like Black women really do come out for Latinos. Like, I don't know, I think I appreciate it personally.
Yeah, same. Like, that's my thing with it too, is like, I heard a lot of shit, but then at the same time I'm kind of like, but I'm not sure if I'm mad, you know, like.
I mean, I think it's just, I hope that the anger doesn't get misdirected. Like, this is the showrunner of this is Jenny Ehrman, who also does, who was a showrunner for Jane the Virgin, or like, it's about to end, so she technically, I guess, still is. She's a white woman. I mean, there's no way around that. Like, we've talked about this before on our Jane the Virgin episode. Yeah. She, you know, I don't think she's not talented. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily think that we should always be letting white people be at the head of this stuff, but, you know.
I think it's just maybe problematic because they, like, I've heard a lot of things about them saying that what they really wanted was them to change, like, the theme of it, because a lot of what the original Charmed was based off of was like Gaelic or Celtic culture, you know, like, and you know, Brujeria has such a interesting complex history with, you know, being Latinx, so like to mix it would be kind of, it feels really wrong because they're so different.
Yeah, and that's another thing that's kind of, I don't think we're gonna know for sure until we see this show, but that's another thing that's interesting, because they were saying that only, at first they were saying that only Melanie Diaz's character is going to be exploring a brujeria or something like that, but then mm-hmm. now it's kind of come out that maybe that's not the case. I don't know, but like from what I had gathered at the very beginning of this show being announced was that it wasn't going to be brujeria at all. They were going to be sticking to the kind of magic that was explored in the original yeah. Charmed. So I don't know at this point. I feel like it's all just rumors, and I just want to watch it and give it the good old 3-episode watch rule. It.
Yeah,
and then make an actual educated decision about this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not happy so far, but at the same time, this is all press, and I agree with you. Like, I don't want to completely break down all of it without, you know, giving it a shot. And then black women get enough shit as it is, and I don't think this is what light skin or brown Latinos are making it to be, you know, like, so I really need to see it before I make that call.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm giving it a shot. I mean, I think that it's still cool to have POC women at the head. Like, that's so much better than a lot of these other shows are doing. But yeah, so I guess enough of Charmed. We'll see how it goes. I guess let's follow up a little bit on what we talked about at the end of last week's episode, which is Birds of Prey. I don't know if you had a chance to look into that at all. I definitely did, because I made that promise.
Oh, I totally didn't. So tell me more about right Birds of Prey.
So yeah, like basically they're pushing back Suicide Squad 2 a little bit, which is supposed to be about like Harley Quinn and the Joker, which nobody cares about, and kind of focusing yeah, a little bit that. More on Birds of Prey, which I found out was going to be directed by Kathy Yan, who she'll technically be the first Asian American woman to direct like a big superhero film, and like Chloe Zhao.
Chloe Zhao will come, right?
Yeah, it's DC. Chloe Zhao will come later. Whoa. But yeah, so Kathy Yan is technically going to be the first one, and it's going to be written by Christina Dodson, who is also writing for the Batgirl movie. So that's pretty interesting. I didn't find really any information on which version of Renee Montoya, like Rosie Perez, is going to be playing. I have no idea. Like, there's that information just isn't available yet, but I'll try to keep you guys posted. I still think this is really interesting, and there's interesting people working on it. So I'm down for it.
No, yeah, that's pretty exciting. I'm like, shout out to DC, and I heard, I don't know. I'm
anti-shout out to DC, though. They fucking got James Gunn on their team. What the fuck is that?
I mean, I don't know. You know, this like cancel culture that we're in right now. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, maybe I have problematic opinions on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like cancel culture either, but he like literally is a pedo. But I mean, I don't know.
Oh, whoa, I didn't know about that part. Whoa. I only heard about like the racist shit that he apologized for, and I was like, wait, I mean, what?
That too, man.
He's girl.
I don't know. Like, he just girl, got kicked off culture. Of Guardians of Galaxy that. Like a couple months ago, like, and then they just, I don't know. I have obviously a lot of opinions about that, but Kathy Yan.
You know, same, like Kathy Yan. Okay. No, I do want to hear your opinions on it though. Like, that's, I
just
think
it's dumb. Like, and then like people just kind of brushed over it. Like, they made such a big deal out of it whenever he got kicked off of Guardians of the Galaxy, but he got hired onto DC and it was nothing. So I guess I'm gonna continue to follow that and see what happens.
Okay, because like I'm in an interesting place with like woke Twitter and woke and like fake woke Twitter. Like, I'm just kind of like done with it, just because I don't know. I've been having an interesting ride with like wokeness lately, and I'm just kind of like, you know, any kind. There's no such thing as like good consumption under a capitalist society. So I'm kind of tired of people like going, you know, this is canceled because they did this, and I'm like, literally every single company that every single one does something fucking horrible, and they always ruin something for someone. So it's like everything is problematic. Like, you can cancel Modelo, but you're still gonna go to Tropicalia. Like, that's what like bothers me about people. It's like they're like, oh, I'm not gonna drink this beer, but I'm gonna go
damn
fucking
at
to
me,
Tropicalia.
Bro.
Which, there's no problem with that, dude. Yeah, I know. Not just you. Like, everyone that I see is like super woke, like super fake woke. They're like, oh, I'm not gonna drink this beer, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know, Coca-Cola is doing the same thing to people in Mexico. Like, every single, like, corporate entity in the world is, like, taking away from people, and it's just called capitalism. So there's no such thing as ethical consumption in a capitalist society. Like, there's nothing you can do. Like, people want to cancel Taylor Swift, but at the same time, Beyonce performed for Gaddafi the same year that his people actually killed him because he was a fucking tyrant. He was a dictator, and she performed for him the same year he got murdered by his own people. So I'm just kind of, like, tired of, like, Stan, fake woke Twitter and where they decide to put their energy, because I'm just kind of like, you're fucking fake woke because Beyonce performed for a fucking, you know, dictator, and I know this and I still support her, so I don't know what it's just,
yeah,
it
that's an, that's off. An interesting concept that you stumbled upon there, is where people draw their lines. So I'll say, yeah, that
I'm confused on it, you know. Yeah, I'm just confused on that, you know, and I just want people to tell me where they're drawing these lines and how are they making up the rules about who we cancel and who we don't cancel. And it's like, boo, we're all going to die. We're living on this rock. And you know what? If something gives you joy and it doesn't hurt anyone, find your joy, find your peace, and mind your business. You know, like, you don't have to be out here, like, you don't have to hurt people. If they're not hurting people, if they're not having hate speech, like, then what? Okay, then let Lana Del Rey fucking sing in Israel. It don't matter if she can't sing in Palestine. You know what? If you're gonna use that same basis that, like, oh, you know, Lana Del Rey shouldn't perform in Israel because they're bombing Palestine, then she shouldn't perform in the United States because we imprison little kids, we kidnap them, we kill black people. What? Where do you draw the fucking line? Don't tell Lana Del Rey not to fucking perform in Israel and not get her coins and then allow her to perform for Americans who are just as shitty. So that's where I'm mad.
Yeah, you're in a different place right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just, like, really done with it. And I'm just, like, that's where I am today on this blessed Sunday, you know?
So blessed.
Ooh, okay,
so blessed.
I'm sorry. And another thing, you know, Kalani, bro, okay, so Kalani is having a baby, so congratulations to her. Like, this is amazing. And we were talking about this now. I'm pretty upset with, like, the internet as well. Like, I'm mad. Everyone has an opinion about Kalani having a baby right now, and they just, like, forgot and completely erased that she was queer, and they just assumed she was a lesbian, and I'm just like, eye roll.
Well, what's interesting to me when you say that, the first thing that I saw about her pregnancy was not people unnecessarily, like, being like, oh, how could she have a baby if she's queer? The first thing that I saw about her pregnancy was people making fun of people who were saying that, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like nobody was on my timeline talking about, oh, how's she pregnant, blah, blah, blah. Like, everybody's on my timeline defending her already. Like, that was point number one. Like, so it's interesting.
Oh, yeah, because some people are great, right? But, like, no, but there was, like, because, like, I would just type in Kalani, like, pregnant in the search, and I was like, oh, I want to see more pictures, right? Like, I wanted to see all the pictures I could get of her. And, yeah, it was trash, bro. It was, like,
it's
like,
so half dumb.
Of it, like, was, like, super positive.
Like, literally, like, one of the big reasons that she kind of, like, was in the media, the first time that she was really big in the media was because of, like, that shit that went down with her, like, you know, with
Kyrie Irving,
right, with a dude, with a man that she was in a relationship. Like, how do you forget that it's been, like, 2 years? Like, just because she's now very, like, outspoken about queerness doesn't erase everything, you know what I mean? That doesn't, like, people don't.
And she said she was queer, she didn't say she was, like, a lesbian. Like, being queer, like, I need more people to pay attention to what that word means. It's like, it's not, you're not subscribing to the norm. Like, you're not, it's just, you're not saying you're a lesbian. You're saying, you know, maybe she's pansexual. Maybe she's bisexual. She doesn't have to actually define that. She said she was queer. End of story. After that, it just means she's into what she's into. She's a free-ass motherfucker like Janelle Monáe. And that's her business.
Right on. I think we've said our piece. Let's move on to things that help us escape.
Oh. Oh, my God. So, okay. Have you heard the news for the Vietnamese bachelor? So remember those two chicks?
Yeah, I do remember.
Oh my God. Okay, so apparently there was this whole controversy because she actually went back to the show after the clip of her leaving with her boo thing, the other contestant.
Well, no, I think it was like, wasn't it like left open ended where, like, she confessed her love kind of, and then she left, and then the other chick stayed.
Yeah. Yeah, so that one of the chicks stayed, and then one of them left. And then I see the happiest fucking tweet in my life is that it's like, oh, remember those two lesbians? They're actually together now. Homegirl that stayed on The Bachelor realized, you know what? I really have this. Bye. Deuces. I'm going to go be happy with Bae. And that's where you see her. She's wearing like a matching pantsuit with her girlfriend. And I'm just like, yes, this is everything I've ever wanted. A lesbian happy ending. Thank you so much.
Or bisexual happy ending. Either way. Yeah.
Whatever, right? Yes, yes, a queer happy ending. Thank you so much. No queer pain. We just here for the matching pantsuits. Like, this is what
I'm just here for, the matching pantsuits. Put that on a shirt. Okay.
Okay, but happy news. Bohemian Rhapsody is coming out with Rami Malek, so I'm excited. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna look forward to watching that.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. And then Halloween comes out, I think today. Oh, literally shit. I'm gonna be seeing that in Dolby. I'll be really excited to see that.
I think I'm going to be dragged to go watch this with Glow. So I'm kind of fucking terrified because I'm a little bit like, I'm a punk. I get scared so easily.
I can't wait, dude. Carolina, the girl that plays Carolina Dean on The Runaways is in it too. What? So I'm excited about it.
Okay, all right. Okay, all right. There's something to look forward to. I hope she doesn't get murdered in the first like 5 minutes. But
don't get your hopes up.
Oh man.
I mean, okay. This is Halloween but, after all, right?
That is true. It's a slasher flick. Like, what else would I expect? But
right.
I'm going to be such a little punk.
Speaking of just Halloween, we should really get into our movies. We've had like the longest banter in existence.
We really have. Sorry about that, guys.
Let's get spoopy.
What movie or TV show are you going to be covering today?
I'm covering Jennifer's Body today.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, a hit classic. What about you?
Fucking movie. I am going to cover another fucking classic. I don't know how spoopy it is, but it's really fucking terrifying to me. It's The Cell with J-Lo.
Oh my god, that's a 90s movie, right?
No, it actually came out in 2000.
Close enough. Do you want me to go first?
Yes, I do, because I'm actually really excited to hear about Jennifer's Body.
Okay. All right, I'll go first for sure. So, one of the opening lines of Jennifer's Body, which I really appreciate, is "Sandbox love never dies," which I just thought was like, such a perfect way to start it, because that's kind of what it's about. It's about like starting out in the sandbox and then going into like this post-pubescent like realm of life or whatever, and the horror of it. It's freaking horrific. Yeah. So Jennifer's Body came out in 2009, no pun intended, starring a huge actress at the time, Megan Fox.
And I get it. I get your joke.
Oh, good. and also starring Amanda Seyfried, who is still a freaking huge actress. And what I found out was that this was directed by Karen Kusama, who, like, now she's only really working in television, but she's connected to a lot of other queer media within the television film industry or whatever. And she's half Japanese. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. Okay, great. All right, we're on the right track here.
Yes, we'll take it. We'll take it.
And it was written by Diablo Cody, who I found out is a woman. And she also wrote Juno. And like,
wait, she wrote Juno? Yeah.
And a couple of other really cool things. And what was cool is that like, it makes a lot of sense. Both of these women were like determined to make like a feminist piece of media. And I think that they succeeded, personally.
Super feminist, dude. Super.
Yeah. So the film starts with like Amanda Seyfried's character, who's named Needy. It's a nickname for Anita, but they call her Needy the whole time.
Oh wait, that's a nickname?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that was a nickname.
Yeah. It's a little on the nose, but basically it starts with her being imprisoned, and she's like a completely different person from who she's kind of portrayed as throughout the actual movie. When it goes back to the beginning of the actual story, which is about like 10 minutes in or something like that, Needy is portrayed as this like literally needy person who always does anything that Jennifer wants. And Jennifer is like this hot ass shit cheerleader or whatever, and played by Megan Fox. So you can only imagine.
Shout out Megan Fox.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the two of them like they have so few boundaries, and like Jennifer's always the one that's like taking advantage of it. So what piqued my interest about this movie is that like there's kind of a very basic plot line to start, you know what I mean? Like where it's like, oh, like nerdy girl and hot cool girl, and typically you see them like
cool girl.
Yeah, like that's kind of like, it's so super typical, right? You see that all the fucking time, or at least you used to. and the hot girl like thinks she's like leveled up beyond anybody that's cool in her little country ass town, and she wants to go hook up with like a hot like band guy from the city. Like literally this stuff is like laid out for you. It's like, you know what I mean, like
so cliche.
Exactly. Yes. So that's what this is all about. But it kind of like turns it all on its head. Like the another part of that overused plotline is that like the dude, the cool city guy, actually has like fucked up intentions, you know what I mean? Like it's, but like this movie, like instead of going that super basic route, like it goes paranormal and has like this super side plotline of like Needy having the hots for Jennifer, and I'm like, yes please. And
that was like low-key the best part and the reason why I watched this movie.
Yeah, but yes, honestly. And well, yeah, if you don't want to be spoiled about this old-ass movie, like, this is almost a 10-year-old movie, skip over, like, the next 10 to 15 minutes or whatever, but because I want to get into it, and I'm going to spoil a good bit of it. I'm not going to spoil, the very ending, but I'm gonna get into a lot of the things that happen because I want to break them down. So, and it's an old movie. I think a lot of you guys have seen it. I hope that you guys can just kind of sit back and enjoy this conversation.
I think it's like such a necessary movie to the intro to anyone's like queerness as like a teenager, like because that's, we were teenagers when this came out, so it's like,
yeah,
very like intro 101, like you're queer now, watch this movie.
Yeah, okay, so basically one night Jennifer drags Needy away from her boyfriend, who I call him Jimmy. I don't think his name is Jimmy on the in the movie, but I call him Jimmy because in real life I think his name is Jimmy. And I remember like I was talking about this movie once to one of my coworkers like forever ago, years ago, and he told me that this actor Jimmy went to a high school that was near where I work, where my little brother actually went to that high school. And like I was like, no way. He's like, yeah, I used to be friends with that guy, and like now he's like a fucking all these movies and shit. He ended up being on Scott Pilgrim and all these other movies and shit. But anyways, Jimmy, which is I call him, it's not his name, but so
let's call him Jimmy. Yeah, I'm cool with that.
So Jennifer like drags her Needy away from her boyfriend, and without much protest, I gotta say that. So they go see this band at a, like a local like dive bar. This is like the only bar in this small little town, and a fire breaks out at the end of it. And the band members like who have been kind of talking to Jennifer throughout the night, they take her away. Like Jennifer's like super shook about like almost dying and shit, and they're just like, oh, just get in my van, like let's just go. And Needy's like,
this is totally normal, get in my van.
And Needy's like, don't do that. But she does, and
of course.
And so Needy just kind of like goes home, and she's also pretty shook because a bunch of people kind of die in this fire. Like it's kind of a tragedy, but they kind of blow over it. It's weird, but anyways,
it's like, oh yeah, we're not gonna listen to this plot point, just keep going.
And it's actually interesting, like there's this particular scene, like there's an image of the like a dead shot on the side of the van where she's in the van like through one of those weird side doors that you pull to the side, and then like the door closes on her, and she looked like Jennifer looks really, or Megan Fox looks really really shook and really really scared and vulnerable in that moment. And it kind of plays back in Amanda Seyfried's character, like her mind a couple of times. And to me, like I don't know if this is on purpose or not, but what I got from it is like it reminds me of like the guilt and like the remorse that like sometimes people feel when their friend gets taken off by somebody who like wants to take advantage of them, you know what I mean, like of the guilt of not having done more. So that kind of comes back later in the movie. Anyways, yeah, a bunch of scary fucking shit happens, right? Like typical scary jump scare type of shit, because this is a scary movie allegedly. And what ends up happening
it's really funny, that's funny, what it is.
And what ends up happening is Needy goes home, and she ends up finding like a really bloody and demonic version of her best friend in her house. Like she's doing all kinds of gross shit, like throws up spiky tar, and she's like a weird vampire succubus killer monster thing. I don't even know how to describe her. But
succubus killer, whatever you said is the perfect description, actually.
Yeah, okay, sweet, great. So she like, you can tell she's like, you know, she's ready to attack. Like she wants some fucking blood or to kill somebody or something, I don't know. But she doesn't kill Needy. She holds back, and there's like a specific moment where she's like about to like go at her neck and shit, and she's just like, I can't do it. So she doesn't do it. And the next day, Needy goes to school, and so does Jennifer. And Jennifer looks completely normal. In fact, she looks better than ever. She's all clean and perfect and shiny and shit. And Needy's like, what the fuck? Like, you know,
bitch,
what I
you
mean?
Was like a zombie last night.
Yeah, you were a freaking vampire last night. So basically, it turns out, like, Jennifer is like sucking the life out of men, and she pretends to seduce them and then goes and like eats them and shit. So
yes, queen, icon, yes,
iconic. She only goes after boys for the most part. And like, what I found out is that this is supposed to be like turning the concept of menstruation on its head. So like once a month, you know, like we menstruate and shit, or like a lot of us do, and it's bloody yeah, and shit. But yeah, but for her it's like backwards, like she has to take in blood instead of get rid of it. So it's like it turns that concept on its head, and it's like every month, and it's like there's a lot of parallels, because she, like, the longer she goes without doing that, she starts like looking like shit, she starts feeling like shit and acting out and stuff like that. And it's like, it's funny because she has like a really funny comment earlier in the film where she's like, PMS was made up by like the government or something like that. I don't know. But that's what that's supposed to represent. So, you know, as it goes, after a few weeks, Jennifer starts looking rough because she hasn't eaten any boys. And so this dude...
That sentence.
So Colin, who's this like local goth boy, he asks her out. I don't know like what came over him, but he does that. And she's like not interested, because why would she be? And then Needy like goes and defends him, and she's just like, he's a cool guy, like blah blah blah. So as soon as Needy expresses like any interest at all in this dude, Jennifer's like, oh, for real? And then she's like, okay, Colin, let's fucking go out. So it's just like some typical straight girl shit, right? Like, one girl shows interest in the dude, so the other one's like, okay, I'm gonna fucking do something about it. So that night, basically, Needy hangs out with Jimmy, her own boyfriend, and Jennifer sends Colin to like some abandoned, creepy old house that she says is her house, which obviously isn't. And she like starts her routine, and you know, she needs to feed, so she chooses that guy. And it's weird because at this point, this is one of the first times that you realize that like Jennifer and Needy have like this weird connection. So like while like freaking Needy is getting down with her boyfriend Jimmy, Jennifer is like eating the shit out of Colin. So this is happening at the same time, and because of their connection, Needy ends up seeing really weird shit. So she sees like one of her dead schoolmates, she sees like blood on the ceiling and all this other shit, and she's like scared, so she's like whimpering. And then like Jimmy thinks that it's because of him, and she's like, no, it's not because of you. But
that's kind of crazy. I don't remember that part.
It's creepy. You have to like really pay attention. But yeah, it's like anyways, she ends up like leaving Jimmy's house, and she goes home, or on her way home, she runs into Demon Jennifer, who just ate the shit out of Colin and like fucking lands on her car all crazy looking and bloody. But she like leaves her on the side of the road and like drives off and goes home. She's freaking out.
She's like, whatever, bye.
Well, because she's like, fuck this shit, right? Like her best friend's a demon. I would fucking run for it too. But anyways, she goes home and like she gets into bed and she's all freaked out, and then she fucking finds Jennifer like in pristine condition, like laying next to her on her bed.
Typical lesbian fashion. She didn't question it. First she's like, what the fuck? And then she's like, well, it's
oh no,
whatever.
She did question it. She was like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah.
Yeah. And I then, mean like at first she was, and then she got over that.
Yeah, so like Jennifer like starts basically like for the first time she's seducing somebody without the intent to kill. Which is makes this scene like one of the most interesting ones, especially to us, because she like just she just seduces her, and it's like they fucking make out for like a fucking hour or something.
Oh my! Okay, you guys, this is like the most iconic scene of like 2009 for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it almost seems like crass to think about like how important that scene was, because it, like most of the time scenes like this in horror movies are just very gratuitous and male gazy, but this wasn't the case. Opposite. I don't think with this one, it was like, it was opposite. Shot in a really specific way, like very carefully shot. And it was very interesting timing in the movie, because like dead in the middle, right? You know what I mean? Like it's not used in the beginning to hook you. It's not used at the end for like whatever it is. It's like
shock value.
It's literally right. Mm-hmm. It's literally just there like, I don't know. It's just well done. It's like You see, us, like, it's and it's intricate. Like, it's not just basic. Like, you see Needy being, like, reluctant because her fucking best friend is a vampire and shit.
Demon.
And
yeah.
You see them be, like, super tender with each other for kind of, like, the first time because, like, throughout the whole movie, they have a lot of shit to say about each other. And Jennifer, like, in particular, she, like, teases Needy a lot about a lot of shit, like about playing doctor as kids or playing boyfriend girlfriend when they were kids, like all these little comments that kind of make it feel like there really was a build up to that moment, you know what I mean? Like there was like it wasn't out of nowhere, and
we were all emotionally invested at that point.
they did really well with that scene. But even though I think we interpreted it that way, I think the writer and the director had a different intention. Like their intent was more and not to portray them as bisexual women, which I think that's kind of what they ended up doing. But what they wanted to represent is like this obsessiveness that you feel towards your friends when you're a teenager. You know what I mean? Like, think, like if you think about it, like chick friends, like they want to like have sleepovers. They want to talk on the phone for hours. They want to like get all riled up about nothing. And there's like a romantic element to that. Like it's super like relationship-y romantic-y if you think about it. Like it's just like, you know what I mean? Like why are these girls really so obsessed with each other? So I think that's what it was meant to represent, is like the weirdness of that relationship when you're young because your emotions are so freaking hyped up and hormones and shit. So
I never thought of it that way. I just thought it was like, I'm weird, this is amazing. Yeah. I'm not gonna overthink the scene.
no, I mean it's still a great scene, it's still like it's done really well. But yeah, so after that scene, because, you know, obviously Needy's character is like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, and she eventually backs off after a long ass makeout session. And Jennifer finally, like, tells her the truth about what happened to her and why she is the way that she is. And it's because the bad guys who took her that night, the other night, they tried to, like, perform some, like, ritual on her because there was this, like, really low-key band who was okay, led by Adam Brody, by the way. And
Adam Brody.
So one of the conditions of the ritual was that she had to be a virgin, which she fucking wasn't, just straight up. Yeah. And they stab her to death and she comes back to life. So I think there's like, I guess it was supposed to be some kind of metaphor there, you know, like she took back her power and he was inadvertent. But they basically, the director and the writer, didn't want to make another movie about women being preyed upon because, like, yes, that scene was very like reminiscent of like rape and stuff like that, and I think that's kind of what it was about. But she like stopped being a victim shortly after. Like shortly after that, she was the hunter, if you will. Killing
dudes.
Yeah. So
loved it.
It was cool. Yeah. So yeah. Once again, like this is a horror story. This is like about like whatever the fuck. But it's at the same time, it's not about that shit. It always leads back to this tumultuous relationship between them two. And like literally like right after she tells her that, she Jennifer like tells her, she's like, the first thing that I did after like this horrific thing happens to me is find my way back to you. Like, what the romantic fuck is that? and she's like, you know, she's like, I couldn't eat you, I couldn't like freaking kill you and stuff. So she went and like chose some random dude off the street, which is super interesting.
Respect. She didn't kill her best friend, she killed some random
dude. At this point, like, Needy is more like horrified by all the killing that she's doing, so they kind of start turning against each other. And because they're so emotionally connected, they sense that and they immediately become like these enemies, which is also kind of like a very teenage girl thing to represent, because that kind of happens, right? Like, one second you're like best friends who don't want to spend a second apart, the next second you want to rip each other's hair out. All that kind of shit.
Oh, whoa.
That aside, there's this like moment not too long after that where like Needy's boyfriend's on Jimmy's mom. She gives him a can of pepper spray, which I thought was like fucking epic, that this mom is giving her son a can of pepper spray. And it's like when
it can happen.
When it's because it's like literally her reasoning is like, it's not safe for boys out there right now. And it, like what the movie's doing, it's kind of becomes obvious in that scene. It's turning in its head, like in our lives, in our current lives, and you know, the past, basically the all of human history, it's always been women who have to look out for men doing shit to her and to them and all this other shit. Like, it's always been that, but this movie kind of turns it on its head, and it's like men are the ones who are now scared, like. And not because of, like, they're not, like, in our real life right now where men are just afraid to be accused of some dumb shit. Like, they're afraid for their lives, like women are. And so I just thought,
I like that. That's a nice little turn.
It just kind of turns around that trope. Like, and it's not, and not just in that way. I mean, in the other ways that we've already talked about, where it's not just about a girl trying to get a guy or even trying to get back at a guy. Like, dudes in this, like, the dudes are just victims. Like, and the rest of it is about Needy and Jennifer and their relationship. Anyways, plot-wise, what happens next is that Jennifer goes after Jimmy, even though Needy has dumped him at this point because she doesn't want him to be the next victim, which doesn't work out for her, obviously. So I'm not gonna go like super into like how it kind of wraps up, because I don't think it's like necessary for me to like talk about all the important elements of it, and because I want to leave a little bit of mystery for those of you who haven't seen it. But a bunch of violent shit goes down. Yes. But there's this particular pool scene where throughout this movie, like you said earlier, like, this is a funny movie, there's a lot of really wild ass one-liners, and they kind of come to fruition during this epic pool fight. Like, one of my personal favorite lines that they say, like, Megan Fox's character, no, Needy, Amanda Seyfried's character, is like, "I thought you only killed boys." And then Megan Fox's character, like, she's like, "I go both ways."
Yeah, that scene, dude. Yes.
Why are they like
that? Was so fucking funny.
And there's so many one-liners like that. Like, God, like, so many epic one-liners that I see in memes all over the place. And there's just, that's worth watching for it alone, if I'm being honest. But anyways, yeah, like I said, a bunch of violent shit goes down. And what we see at the beginning of the movie, we end up seeing again at the end of the movie, which is, like, a completely different version of Needy, who, you know, has gone through all this shit at this point.
So, like, in conclusion, it's hard being a teenage girl.
Basically. Yeah.
Being a woman is just trash, so.
But I think this movie, and I mean, I think you would agree with me, like, it's held in such high regards by the queer community because of its display of, like, the sexuality spectrum, you know what I mean? Like, it's, nothing is just this or that or black and white. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like Needy wasn't into her boyfriend. She was just more into Jennifer. I don't know.
Yes, it was. Yeah, that's, like, they're actually showing you, like, you know, what it means to be queer. And, like, it's not just one way. It can be however the fuck that person feels. And that's so cool. And then we actually got to see, like, female desire of another woman. Like, I don't know. We don't get to see it not be so creepy. You know, like, blue is the warmest color. It felt a little, you know, creepy. But this didn't.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just, like, a super fun watch, and it has, like, some low-key social commentary, and it's just fucking fun. Like, I would give it, I would probably give it, I don't know, like, you don't really need Kafe to watch this, because it's pretty wild, and it's funny. Yeah, it's funny, and it's pretty fuck, wild,
and it's,
yeah,
like, doing crazy shit.
So, I would say maybe just, like, a half cafecito. Because I did have to drink a cafecito this morning because it was a morning time. And I don't know why I'm watching a horror film in the morning, but I was.
That's the best time to watch it, because they should be, like, fucking with you the rest of the day. At night is not a good time.
I don't really get scared at horror movies, but yeah, I feel you.
So, like, what was your favorite part about the movie? What was, like, one, if you could sum it up in, like, a couple words, what would you, like, if you're recommending this to, like, yo mama, what would you say?
I would say, like, this shit is really fucking funny, and it's, like, super feminist, and without it being whatever preachy, like, people don't like that shit, but it's just fucking fun. I don't know, like, I know it wasn't super highly rated by, like, critics or anything, but I just thought it was fucking cool.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's because a bunch of, like, white men write reviews, you know? So, of course, they're not going to think this shit is, like, the best. It's the best. I love that fucking movie.
Yeah, it's so good. But let's go back in time a little bit more. Just a little bit more.
Ooh, let's take it back.
To 2000. To year 2000, J-Lo.
Ooh. The year 2000, J-Lo. Okay, all right. This is going to be a hot take, but, okay, I'm going to be reviewing The Cell. They came out in 2000 with J-Lo, Vince Vaughn, and Vincent D'Onofrio. You know all those people. They're super fucking famous. And hot take, this is, like, J-Lo's second best fucking movie she has ever made. A Wedding Planner is probably third, but this is number two.
Yeah.
So.
Sorry, I got distracted.
I mean, I'm just. No, you're good. It's just a hot take for me because, like, Selena, of course, it made her whole entire career, but The Cell, Bro, the looks that she's pulling off in this fucking movie is just, it's incredible. And all the credit should go to the director, which is Tarsem Singh. He's an Indian director. You've also probably, if you heard of him, then you definitely watched The Fall, which was actually probably a masterpiece to me. I fucking love The Fall. It took him like 10 years to make. And The Cell was the one he made a couple of years way before it. And it's amazing. It centers around a child psychologist who goes in the mind of a serial killer. It's super disturbing, and the visuals on this thing don't make it easier for the viewer, but also make it extremely interesting and make it like one of the most memorable things I've ever watched in my life. Because honest to God, I watched clips of this as a child and I was like, I need to stay away from that fucking movie. Like, I'm not gonna watch that shit for a while. So it took me years to finally, like, build up the courage to watch The Cell. And then once I did, I swear to you, I've never, like, looked back. Like, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. So I'm really hyping it, but you don't understand. Like, I really fucking love this movie. And it's not like I think J-Lo is, like, the best actress in the world. Like, I just think what they're doing with her and what they're doing with the visuals is incredible. So it starts off with her being a child psychologist to like this billionaire son who's comatose. And that's what she does. She goes into comatose people's brains and try to help them get out of their trauma. You know, what a concept is like in the future, what we're using technology for is to help people with their trauma. Like, I really like that concept. Like, if we had that, if we had people that really were like putting billions and billions of dollars into like, you know, self-care without including a bubble bath, you know, that would be like the shit.
So drag
right, like stop taking bubble baths and lighting candles. And I'm dragging myself. I love candles. I think most queer women do. But you know, concept, in the future we're gonna use our money to treat trauma patients with and get them out of like their states. Anyways, what this movie's doing is taking a really like super 2000s idea of where the way the future is going to look, the way technology is going to be, and mixing it with like a lot of like a magical realism, which we don't really get to see, you know, like I guess we do, but not in this same way, because Tarsem is not like a white man and he doesn't interpret the world the same way that like, you know, let's say Scorsese interprets the world or the way the director of Seven. Because if I could compare this movie, I'd compare it to like Seven. I compare it to The Matrix, you know, and mixing Seven and The Matrix, you get this shit. And I love it because instead of going into like a different world where everything's gray and mechanical, you know, they're like The Matrix, you go into this world that's completely robotic and mechanical and gross versus The Cell, where she's going into this world that's actually beautiful. And he you open up on a scene where she's in the desert. And what's so fucking cool about that is that he actually filmed that. He filmed a lot of the desert scenes in Africa and Namibia. And he had to fight for those scenes because a lot of American, all the people who were producers that were putting money into this film didn't think that was a good idea. They're like, you know, we don't have deserts in Cali. Why do you have to shoot a desert in Africa? And he's like, nah, you don't understand. The world is bigger than California or the United States. And visually speaking, that was one of the best decisions he's ever made. Like, these shots in the desert are like make the whole movie look unreal. I mean, the whole thing is just visually one of the most beautiful things. I can't get over it. He shoots these scenes in the desert meant to reflect this this comatose child and where he was last traumatized. And it's just absolutely gorgeous. And J-Lo is wearing these fucking outfits that I've just, yo, to this day. What is it? Have you ever seen the Fifth Element, Maitha?
No.
Okay. The Fifth Element also takes, you know, I think Paul Gaultier did the fashion for the entire movie. In this movie, I don't know who did the costume design, but it looks wicked. Have you ever seen The Cell?
I have seen The Cell. It was a long time ago on VHS, but that counts, right?
Yes, it does. That's like the OG way of watching this movie is on VHS, because that's how old this shit is. What he's doing as a director is like blowing my mind this entire movie, because he's mixing a lot of genres and throughout the movie, not just by style, not just by like the concepts of the entire themes of the movie, because, you know, it's not only is it like a detective serial killer movie, it's also like a thriller, it's also about magical realism, and it's also he's mixing all of those and making like a, you know, Sprite remix, you know, I think Sprite remix came out in 2000, version of like his reality. Like, not only is J-Lo representing like this angelic Holy Mother Catholic figure, because like when you see her, you get like these images of like, you know, Catholicism, but not just Catholicism, you get like Catholicism, she's in a building that looks like a mosque at one point, and he's mixing a lot of like religious torture elements with like Middle Eastern like style references, like the buildings look like mosques, like she's dressed like Mother Mary, like there's a lot of like elements of religion in here that are mixing with, you know, BDSM. Which, I mean, the cool thing about what's happening with the BDSM, like, representation in this movie is that, like, at least J-Lo's not kink-shaming, but everyone else is made to feel really, really uncomfortable because the serial killer likes to suspend his body over his victims, and okay, it is some seriously twisted shit. Yeah, you haven't seen this in a while. he has all these, like, you know, piercings, you know, because body suspension is a thing. But at least she doesn't make him feel weird about it, because a lot of the movie is about her body even being suspended. So I feel like, you know, we weren't too kink-shaming me there. We're, like, accepting of other people's things, but also he's a serial killer. So I don't know how accepting we should be of him, right? without giving too much away, like, you know he's a serial killer very, very soon, and that's not the plot. That's not the point of the movie. The point of the movie is to get inside of his mind. And she is having these continued conversations with his inner child versus his inner demons. And it's, I mean, it's kind of on the nose, right? Like, there's a little kid who's scared, and then there's a demon who's, like, really fucking scary. And he has, like, horns coming out of his head. And
it's
like
the id and then the ego and the fucking whatever
else.
Yes,
yes, exactly. It's so, like, you know, it's super psychology 101, but at the same time, it's like, bitch, you never saw your mind looking like this, okay? Like, shout out to Tarsem, because, like, ain't nobody thought their inner demons looked like that, okay? Like, that's some twisted shit in here. But I can talk about this movie all day and Tarsem all day, but there's some other elements I want to get into. Is there's some pretty memorable scenes in this movie with J-Lo. I mean, as far as her acting goes, I wouldn't say I give her, like, you know, 5 faluses for her acting. That's not what we're here for. We're not here for anyone's acting except Vincent D'Onofrio's acting, because if you've seen Law and Order, you already know that he can be a creepy motherfucker. And that's what he's doing in this movie, is being mad creepy. But J-Lo's performance, I mean, is J-Lo an actress? Like, God. You know, other than Selena, like, are we gonna fault her for not being that, you know, whatever. That's not what she's doing in this movie. What she's there is just to represent an idea of, like, the Holy Mother, of the Savior woman. And I appreciate that she's a brown woman, although I don't know who she was, what phase of her career. I don't know if she was Puerto Rican at this point, or Latina, or Chicana. I don't know what she was at this point of her career, but...
Which, by the way, we're referring to how she kind of changes up her style a lot.
Yes, she changed her style a lot, you guys. I don't know what stage of her style she was in at this point in 2000. I can't remember. But we're not here for her acting. We never have been, guys. You know, Selena's her most iconic role, and this is her second most iconic, most important thing she's ever done. And it's because of the looks she has. Like, honestly, Tarsem came from, like, music, directing music videos and commercials, and you can tell by how quickly your eye is catching everything in this movie, and it's really about visuals. It's really about how creepy this shit is. There's this horse at this one point that gets sliced, and its heart is still beating, and you can see it pumping through, and it's mad wild. I could talk about the visuals all day, and I could probably stop. But plot-wise, it's kind of like a basic A to B kind of plot. Like, it's not really, you know what's going to happen. It's not, like, shocking. The thriller aspect of is it, you know, are they going to have enough time to save the girl? La, la, la. So if you liked Seven, and if you like The Matrix, and you like a good fucking angle and a good fucking view, this movie's for you. I give it, like, 4.5 fondances for a scary movie, because it's the only scary movie I'm willing to watch.
It's a solid-ass rating.
It's a solid-ass rating. I fuck with this movie. Like, if you want to be terrified and have nightmares for, like, a couple weeks, because I'm a punk, then The Cell is for you, and... We're not watching it for her acting, guys. That's not what we're here for. We're here for her looks, okay? And it's beautiful. And what it's doing to your mind, and what it makes you think of, like, you know, he's really pushing the boundaries of what you're able to imagine is like torture, what you're able to imagine is scary. Like, things that you don't actually think are that scary become really fucking creepy in this movie. So give it a watch. Give it your time. Rent it on the internet, guys. You can watch it anywhere now, and it's beautiful. Watch it. And then when you're done with that, watch The Fall, because that is another gorgeous movie where the lead is a light-skinned Middle Eastern girl, and I'm down. I fucking stand. As long as, you know, we're getting different perspectives out here, and that's what's really important and unique about The Cell, is that Tarsem is an Indian man, and you can tell because none of his, like, visual references are, like, they're not fucking played out, you know? None of this has been seen. Like, I'm seeing beautiful shit here, and he's all about getting different angles all across the world. He's about a global mindset, and it's beautiful. So I'm good. I'll stop there.
So to put this in perspective, J-Lo has a movie coming out in a couple of weeks called Second Act. It might actually already be out today. I don't really know, but it's coming out pretty soon.
Yeah.
So 18 years later, guys, she's still kind of doing shit. That's kind of impressive.
We stand a queen that don't really know how to act, but still out here being successful, okay? We support J-Lo.
Oh, dear.
God, I support J-Lo, but, you know, she ain't Meryl Streep. You know, it's not right to even say, you know, but we here for J-Lo.
Yeah, it's fine. I kind of can't wait until Latinos Who Lunch gets into J-Lo, like, really goes in on her one day, because I think they've only, like, scratched the surface of their thoughts on her thus far.
Yeah. I don't have many opinions on J-Lo. She doesn't... Yeah, I can't wait to hear it, but my opinion is, like, look, she ain't an actress, she ain't a singer, she a dancer, and she's made a very successful career out of someone who can just dance, be on time, and work hard. Okay, you know what? I'm gonna let her be. I'm gonna let her live. She's come a long way. She ain't the same Jenny from the Block, or she ain't the same one saying the N-word no more. We good? We proud of you, girl?
You know, what's funny is that this wasn't on purpose, but I talked about Jennifer's body, and you talked about Jennifer Lopez.
Oh my god, there it is,
the connection.
Jennifer Lopez's body, right? Like those.
Yeah.
And actually, yo, shout out to that, because that The Cell could have also been called Jennifer Lopez's body, because okay, wow, a lot of the nudity in this movie felt gratuitous, but none of J-Lo naked, but just a lot of skimpy scenes of her, and I was like, this feels unnecessary. Like, she could have been wearing pants here, but I mean, as a queer woman, I'm not opposed to it, but at the same time,
I guess that's evolving, huh? You went from the OG Jennifer's body that was extra gratuitous with women, and then you went to Jennifer's body 2009, which was less gratuitous and ran by women.
Yeah, there we go. Development of Jennifer's body. Yeah. Look at that.
All right. Wow. Halloween, what a start to Halloween.
Yeah, you guys be safe out there. Don't you know, don't trust white men. Don't go out alone. Don't trust white men, girls. Don't do it. Stay in groups of five.
If
you need somebody to pick you up if you're drunk, I got you, girl. If you're in Dallas, I got you. Call me, I will pick you up. I won't definitely not be drinking, so
right on. So I hope that this helps people, I don't know, start their Halloween spoopiness, and maybe gives them some ideas of rewatchable things and get to see things from a different perspective on these older movies that I think a lot of people have seen them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have seen The Cell. And a lot of people have seen Jennifer's Body for like so many reasons. So oh, guys, we have some exciting shit coming. Knock on all the wood, and exciting things are coming, guys. We're so happy. We're so excited. I'm going to be in LA on my best friend's birthday. So shout out to her birthday. But I'm super excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I think next weekend is going to be my only weekend that I'm not doing anything. And then after that, it's going to be like, you're going to be in town. And then Tropicalia, which, yes, I'm sorry that I'm going to that. And then the following weekend, you're coming back again.
And then I'm be in town again.
Yeah, and then you're going to be back again. And then, Thanksgiving. I don't fucking know.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be really fucking fly.
Yeah, we have a lot of really cool episodes coming at you guys. Like, there's so much cool shit and so many cool people that are going to be coming through. And I'm really fucking stoked about it. Yo, I always forget to say this at the beginning. I feel like I should be saying this at the beginning because then maybe people would actually do this. But we need more ratings on iTunes, guys. We're like a little stagnant in that department, and those help more than anything. So if you have 2.5 seconds, go to iTunes, scroll down, hit that 5-star, leave us a review if you can. That's gonna help us more than you know, yes. And it's free. So do that.
Yes, please do help some queer Latinos making shit. So that more people can find out about us and more people can listen and we can see it spread around here, you know?
Right on. So next week, there will not be a regular episode. Our episode is only going to be on Patreon. So you can find that episode at patreon.com/CYC podcast. Otherwise, we'll see you in November.
Yes. Happy Halloween, y'all.
Bye.